ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We start the show with the headlines that you need to know. Starts with an external review of Iowa's football program, which found an environment where many black players felt bullied and demeaned, and recommended that Coach Kirk Ferentz and Athletic Director Gary Barta take steps to improve the culture. Iowa commissioned this review. It was commissioned externally, and claims from more than 60 former players in early June about racial inequities inside the football program. The review found many positive comments from current and former players towards Ferentz, but it identified three members of the coaching staff on field and from the strength and conditioning program who, quote, abused their power and verbally abused and bullied players. So, starting to see some of the results come in. We'll see what it means for change coming for Iowa. Next up on your headlines, we'll stick in some college football. Notre Dame, remember, is going to join the ACC just for the 2020 season. Heather Dinich has written an article on the ESPN.com site that you can check out, where she mentions Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick said the program's partnership with the ACC was the result of, quote, unusual circumstances unrelated to Notre Dame's long-term assessment of independence. In other words, this was a marriage that works for right now. They've texted each other, they said you up, and they found some answers, but neither of them are looking to put a ring on it. It looks like it's going to be temporary at best. And a little bit of NFL news. One of the more interesting situations over the last few days has come from the Tennessee Titans, who simply haven't heard from outside linebacker Vic Beasley. We get the note this morning that that's now changed. According to Teron Davenport's article out on ESPN.com, Tennessee Titans GM John Robinson released a statement on Thursday saying that outside linebacker Vic Beasley will be reporting to training camp soon. He missed the first two days of camp and did not contact the team. The team placed him on the reserve, did not report list on Tuesday. Quote, I have been in contact with Vic. He's not here. He understands his absence is unexcused, and he told me he will be reporting to camp in the near future. So those are the latest headlines that you need to know. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. ESPN News, I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and you guys hang out with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The NBA is back. We can get some excitement going. Let's have a little fun. Let's get pumped for NBA games. We're going to get games starting today in the bubble that matter. So the question for you, which player is under the most pressure in the NBA restart? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You're going to hear a lot from First Take on this today. You're going to hear a lot from the concepts of them from a couple of players. But I want you guys to think about this. There are a lot of different guys that you could argue are under tremendous pressure. Is it a LeBron? Is it a Kawhi? Is it a Giannis? Is it a Tatum? Is it an Embiid or a Simmons? Tell me who. Tell me why. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And I'll tell you about Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Only $45 a month gets you the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for up to 50% less than the big carriers. Only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. The Straight Talk comes from the Stephen A. and Max Kellerman. It's good that I can find their names. Stephen A. and Max Kellerman on First Take today when they debated who they have more faith in to deliver a championship. Is it LeBron or is it Kawhi?
Well, absolutely it's LeBron James. Of course I'm going to have more faith in LeBron James than Mr. Load Management himself, Kawhi Leonard. Now, obviously, load management isn't applicable in this particular situation because he's had about 5 months off. Even though he hasn't looked great during the preseason, there's no big deal with that. We understand those are exhibition games. That don't mean anything. Kawhi Leonard is that dude. We understand that. But he ain't no three-time champion. He ain't a four-time league MVP. And even though he's the reigning champion, okay, the bottom line is I can make a legitimate argument, very legitimate argument, that was by default and luck, to be quite honest with you. But that's a story for another day. I would like to focus on LeBron James, the dude that's in his 17th season, age 35, obviously a phenomenal physical specimen, averaging 25-10, leading the league in assists, being the dude that is that dude for the Los Angeles Lakers, making Anthony Davis look like an MVP as well. Not to say that Anthony Davis needs that much help, because we all know he's all world. But in the end, when you see what LeBron has done, particularly as it pertains his leadership, and you recognize the load that he's going to have to carry with Avery Bradley electing to sit out this renewed season. Obviously, Rajon Rondo out for the first few weeks because of his thumb situation, if I remember correctly. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, J.R. Smith, Alex Caruso, and all of these guys. What are they going to matter if it's not for LeBron James' greatness facilitating things for them? So I'm going to go with LeBron in this particular situation. I think Kawhi is going to be buffered by the help that he has on the Los Angeles Clippers. LeBron will be asked to carry a heavier load. That obviously is a very daunting task, but if anybody's up to the task and anybody can handle it, it would be him, particularly in comparison to Kawhi Leonard. If the question is, and it is, about LeBron versus Kawhi as it pertains to faith, trustworthiness, and reliability, I'm going with LeBron James.
And I'm going with Kawhi Leonard, and that is no knock against LeBron. LeBron turned himself from a guy who looked unsure in the clutch early in his career, who really didn't want it, right? Like, you think about that series when he was in Miami against Dallas, and he was playing hot potato with the ball. It's not just making the right basketball play. He didn't want the responsibility. Partly that's because Stephen A., for his career, he shoots 73% from the line, which isn't awful, but not great either. Kawhi is up to something like 85%. He's not as scared at the end of games to have the ball in his hand on the stripe to take it to the hole. And partly it's because LeBron had these enormous expectations. He had to be the best ever from the very beginning. But whatever it was, Stephen A., LeBron James had to evolve into a clutch player. And to give him credit, he became very clutch. As great he is as he is normally, when it matters most, he's even better. But Kawhi Leonard was born cold-blooded. Born that way in the league.
Stop it.
Even as a puppy.
What?
Stephen A. Cold-blooded.
What do you mean born with it?
Kawhi,
what are you talking about?
I'm not saying Kawhi was born a star into the league, but he's always been cold-blooded. How many 22-year-olds do you think a coach could go up to and say, you're going to guard a prime LeBron James and try to beat the Heat with the big three, and we're relying on you to guard that guy? How many 22-year-olds go and do that? And then by the end of that series are also dropping 20-plus points a game and wind up winning
MVP of that series.
How many players are doing that? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I don't know how many players would be in a position to do that, because the bottom line is, how many players would have Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and a future Hall of Famer, first ballot, surefire,
anyone in the finals,
the greatest power forward in the history of basketball? The fact of the matter is that, excuse me, we need you to be the face in front of LeBron James, who, by the way, averaged 28 that series. I'd like to remind everybody about that. It wasn't like LeBron James fell off the map.
But they gave Kawhi the MVP, I wonder why.
Listen, they gave him the MVP. I'm not trying to say he didn't do a decent job against LeBron James, but they had
LeBron
to give it to somebody.
LeBron wasn't a good enough team
for
you?
And when you looked at Tim Duncan, Tony Parker,
LeBron wasn't on a good enough team for you? LeBron made
he was
a super
on a good
team,
enough team for me, but
so great that people got mad at him for putting it together. But yeah, sure, Kawhi, you mentioned the other great players on Kawhi's team, but Kawhi got the MVP. But Stephen A., it doesn't stop there. He was a puppy. He was still finding his way when he won finals MVP. Then he turned himself into a legit MVP regular season
candidate. He was all right.
And then in the playoffs,
he had one
of the greatest postseason runs in the history of American team sports. Shut down Giannis, was the MVP of that series. Beat Embiid and Simmons with one of the greatest clutch shots in the history of basketball, and topped it off with a finals MVP. And now that dude is 28 years old, in his physical prime, great two-way player, clutch, elevates under pressure. And LeBron is 35, okay? And unlike LeBron, Kawhi never had to learn how to be that clutch player. He was always cool under pressure the end of games. Always.
There's no doubt that he's always cool and under pressure. But, I mean, if you're talking about faith to deliver and you're looking at the two of them, this comes down to both of them have delivered. We're almost splitting hairs, and we're looking at one player as too much of the pressure when it comes to the conversation about how this is all going to play out. I mean, the Lakers and the Clippers, in my mind, frankly, aren't going to be defined by LeBron or Kawhi. They're going to be defined by the involvement of everybody else on those rosters. One man cannot win you a championship, especially out of the West. So don't forget, by the way, check out ESPN Audio at Home by telling Alexa to, quote, play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz Vans, find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. You guys are ready for anything, too. We're asking you, with the NBA back, which player's under the most pressure in the NBA restart? Jason in Seattle, what you got? Who do you think's under the most pressure?
Yeah, I'll say Kemba Walker for my Boston Celtics, and that's only because, replacing the shoes of Kyrie Irving and just in general trying to get that team to go over that hurdle of making it to the finals, because they're definitely a team that has the chemistry and the players to be a finals team. But Kemba Walker staying healthy, I think that's another big important thing. So that's my take on that.
Look, I don't mind that take, and thanks for the take on it. I mean, I keep arguing. I think that the East, we're not respecting the Bucks enough. But with that being said, you put the Bucks aside. There are a handful of teams that I think are under tremendous pressure right now. Obviously, the Celtics are going to be one, and so are the 76ers. I mean, if you're in Philly, I was talking to our buddies on ESPN in Philadelphia yesterday about this. Like, if you're in Philly, at some point you're looking around at Simmons and Embiid and saying, if not now, then when? Like, when are you going to take that next plunge? So, to me, I think that's a great call, and I think you could look at a lot of pressure on the East side. I don't know that Toronto has a lot of pressure. I feel like they're still living high on a championship, but you can make the argument it's all over the place. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. With the NBA back, you tell me who's under the most pressure in the NBA restart. In the meantime, let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line, get a little expertise. We'll get it from George Sedano joining us now. George, thanks for the time, man. Of course, most importantly, I hope you and yours are safe. We're talking a little bit about pressure today. So who's under more pressure, LeBron or Kawhi? You're right in the thick of things in L.A. So where's the pressure lie in the city when you look at its two megastars?
The pressure's always on LeBron. I mean, just because it's inherently always on LeBron. And he also happens to play with the Lakers, right? So there's this collision course of these monster entities between those two. And there's an expectation with the Lakers. They've got 16 titles. Their expectation when LeBron came here was to add more to those titles. And with the Clippers, no disrespect to Kawhi or Steve Ballmer and what they're trying to build there, for as much success as Kawhi's had, the organization has had very little success. So even just getting to a finals, although they built this team to win a championship, would be a huge accomplishment for them.
Well, and it's interesting because when you talk about that sort of thing, I keep thinking about what it means moving forward. And it felt like LeBron wasn't truly accepted by the Lakers fans in the beginning. But then obviously through Kobe and everything that's happened this year, he's starting to become beloved. You've got Kawhi over here with the Clippers. Is there one of the two of those players that you think their long-term sort of love affair with the city grows more if they win a championship?
It's clearly LeBron. I'll tell you this. Lou Williams said this best. He wanted to win a championship, obviously, because A, he wants to win a championship, but B, he wanted to see himself potentially booed at his own parade. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are LA kids, and yet we're attending events this offseason and getting booed. That's the reality of Los Angeles. 90%+ of the town is a Laker fan. So, yeah, to answer your question, it's absolutely LeBron or anyone that would be associated with the Lakers.
We're talking to George Sedano, who you can obviously hear on ESPN LA. And George, I mean, you cover all of the NBA for us. And so I'm going to throw one other name into this because I still feel like the pressure around the Bucks organization specifically to find a way to win a championship so that Giannis decides he wants to stay there forever and ever. It feels like this is that moment where they could sort of get into that conversation. So what's the pressure like in your mind for the Bucks organization?
A tremendous amount, Jason. There is a tremendous amount of pressure because this is the offseason they can offer him the Supermax extension, and no one can offer him anything at this particular point outside of the Bucks. So them winning a championship, even just getting to the finals, I think, could at least help them, right? Because it's a step in the right direction after the disappointment that was last season. And then it puts even more pressure potentially on next season to try to win that championship, because he would face unrestricted free agency if he hadn't signed the extension. But at least getting to the finals has to be a goal to at least convince him potentially to sign that extension. And if he doesn't, then they really need to freak out a little bit. They'll be sweating it because if he heads to unrestricted free agency in the summer of 2021, there's going to be a lot of suitors out there for him, and a lot of teams are trying to carve out space to add someone like him who's a generational talent.
It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're talking to George Sedano. George, I'm going to look at the other end of the spectrum here because I think there's some interesting pressure on some of the young guys. I feel like the NBA went through the entire process of expanding the playoffs just to cram Zion in there somewhere. And then you've got Ja Morant over here with Memphis, who has taken them to a sneaky good season that I don't think is given enough credit. So when you look at the two young guys that are sort of the beacons of their franchise, what kind of pressure is on the young guys to find a way to get in, not just to get into the playoff, but try and make some noise if they can get there?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's a ton of pressure on those guys. I think they're playing with house money, all of them, at this particular point. And, yeah, it did feel like the NBA did their best to make sure Zion was a part of it. But I also think part of it was they needed the regular season games to kind of help the teams offset some costs with their regional sports network. So the more teams you had involved, the easier that was going to be to do. In regards to those two, I mean, look, man, we're talking about two kids that are great friends. They've played on AAU teams together, but there is clearly going to be a rivalry. And we've seen rivalries where guys are friends. I mean, Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas. You know, I covered Alonzo Mourning for many years, and him and Patrick Ewing remained friends, but had fierce battles on the court, much like Magic and Isaiah. But I think those two guys are the future of the sport, particularly Zion. Like, there's a lot riding on Zion being the face of the NBA, but Ja's going to be there right with him. Like, we're going to have these discussions, much like we did early in LeBron's career, right? When we were talking about LeBron and Melo, and then, of course, Dwayne Wade was the first of that group to get a championship. Like, there's going to be that conversation with these guys, and that's good for everyone involved, including the NBA.
We're talking to George Sedona. So I also want to just let's throw out there, I'm going to let you wager Mike Golic Sr.'s house, but you got to sit next to him while the wager plays out. That's the way I like to do this. So a little bit of pressure because you know the other man's house is on the line. If you got to put his house on one team in this entire bubble, who you got?
To win the championship?
Yeah, win it all.
Yeah, I'm going with the Lakers. I'm not betting against LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think that Anthony Davis, and this is not any disrespect to anyone that LeBron has played with previously, you know, including Hall of Famers like Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Kyrie and Kevin Love, although I don't know if Love is necessarily a Hall of Famer, but he's at least a borderline candidate. I would say that Anthony Davis has fit seamlessly with LeBron more so than any other teammate he's had. And we know what we're getting out of LeBron in the playoffs. We're going to get about 30 points and close to a triple-double pretty much every night. Anthony Davis needs to show people why the Lakers traded pretty much the entire farm for him. And I think he's capable of doing that, and I think ultimately the biggest test for the Lakers will be against the Clippers, which is where we started this conversation. And for as great as the Clippers are, and they're deep, and they have two guys they can throw at LeBron in Paul George and Kawhi, maybe the two best guys that you could throw at LeBron, LeBron will still get his. Anthony Davis has to make them pay. They don't have a matchup for Anthony Davis, which then opens things up for their shooters. So because of that, I like the Lakers. I think they're going to get out of the West. And I think the Clippers will be their toughest matchup. No, again, no disrespect to Milwaukee. I just think the Lakers and Clippers are the two best teams. And whoever comes out of there will win the championship. But I'm picking the Lakers.
Before we let you go, George, I can't talk to somebody that's in L.A. and not at least ask your reaction. We all know at this point, Joe Kelly, 8 games for the Dodgers. Anything you want to get off your chest before we let you go?
I mean, for the love of God, man. Like, what kind of kangaroo court was this? You know, he gets 8 games, 13% of the season for that because he taunted Carlos Correa, like, and he trash-talked him. I know he threw the ball at him. Look, the Bregman pitch, you can say, was a purpose pitch. The Correa, I mean, you're not throwing a breaking ball if you're going to try to hit somebody. Like, I don't buy that by any stretch of the imagination. And I just think, look, I can go down this rabbit hole with you forever, okay? I know people are going to say that when I say this, that it's nonsense that you suspend Joe Kelly and even Dave Roberts and the Astros got no punishment. Their players didn't get any punishment at all. You know, clearly, A.J. Hinch lost his job. Luna lost his job. But the players got nothing. And I know they were granted immunity. But they were only granted immunity because the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, didn't want to get into a fight with the union, potentially. But here's the other part of this. This is the interesting part. The players, when that decision came down, were the most vocal people who were upset at Rob Manfred for not punishing the Astros. So the people who belonged to that same union that he didn't want to fight were the most vocal about not suspending those players. So I think this is just one big mess that Rob Manfred has created. And it makes me question if he can be the lead guy. He was the number two guy in Major League Baseball for a long time and did a great job. But this mess makes me wonder if he can be the guy to lead Major League Baseball. Because this particular instance just seems absurd to me to suspend a guy 13% of the season over, you know, taunting a guy or whatever, throwing a pitch. They made Joe Kelly an example. But I'll tell you this, he'll never have to pay for a dinner in L.A. for the rest of his life.
hey, that in and of itself can rack up the bills. We know that. Follow him on Twitter, at Sedano. Watch him. Listen to him on ESPN LA. Man, as always, I appreciate your time. Most importantly, stay safe. But thanks so much for coming on and give us the expertise, my friend.
Jason, thank you for having me on your show. Stay healthy, stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Always great stuff from George. And again, you can listen to him on ESPN 710 LA. Always doing great work there. Okay, so we talked to George a lot about pressure with the NBA back. I want you guys to chime in. We only got a couple shows left, so this is your chance to get your time in, to get your take in, I should say. First, take your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who you got as some of the player in the bubble that you think is under the most pressure? We're going to take some of your take. Plus, coming up, is Patrick Mahomes really not the best player in the NFL? Really? We'll explain next. I don't know if there's an explanation, but we'll at least talk. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I want you guys to chime in. Which NBA player is under the most pressure in their NBA restart? Remember, we're getting the restart tonight. So I want you guys to tell me who's under the most pressure. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Let's go to Bob in North Dakota. Bob, what you got? What's your take on who's under the most pressure?
Hey, Jason, appreciate you. Thanks for keeping the airways going during this these tough times, man.
Heck yeah, man. Thanks for listening. What you got? What's your take?
This question's so easy. It's so easy. Of course it's LeBron James. Respectfully, I got to disagree with this guy that says Kemba Walker and any of these other guys. Look at it this way. It's like we're looking through these guys in a lens. For most of the league, if not all the league, you're looking at a little magnifying glass that you buy at Walmart, and we look at them through that. LeBron James, we are scrutinizing him with a Hubble telescope. Everything he does, every action he does, every victory he does, every loss he does, completely scrutinized at a level that the other guys are not. I'll give you a really good example. He won his first NBA championship. And do you know what Rick Bucher said after he
won? I think we might have lost Bob. We had Bob. We lost Bob. He was giving me his example. Look, Bob, I like the LeBron take on it, and I understand what you're saying. But let me just play at least the counter to it, the devil's advocate to LeBron being the one that's under the most pressure in the bubble. No matter what LeBron does, most people have already made their mind up on how they feel about him. And frankly, if he doesn't win a championship with the Lakers, the long-term legacy, I don't think either way is going to be affected. People have made their mind up. At the end of the day, everybody's decided they know exactly how they feel about LeBron. So I'm not sure he can do anything, win or lose, that will really change long-term. So maybe there's not that much pressure. What I do know is that my mind is still blown from a list yesterday listing the NFL Network's top 100 players where Patrick Mahomes finished fourth. I got to get some thoughts on it from an expert. Dan Graziano joins us on the show. Penzel Performance Line, ESPN NFL Insider. Dan, two quarterbacks, Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson, listed ahead of Patrick Mahomes on the NFL top 100 list. Just give me some concept of how that happens.
I don't know. I mean, look, the list is voted on by players. You know, we're usually given to understand that they're supposed to know what they're talking about when it comes to this stuff. But, you know, if you really want to break it down, the inconsistency bothers me, right? Like, if you want to tell me Russell Wilson's better than Mahomes because he's played 150 games and Mahomes has played 40, okay, I'll at least listen to that argument, even though I don't agree with it. If you want to tell me Lamar Jackson had the better year, all right, I'll at least listen to that argument, even though I'm not necessarily sure that's true. But you can't tell me both things because Lamar hasn't played as much as Mahomes has. So, to me, it's weird. Aaron Donald, you know, you can argue, is Aaron Donald the best player in the league? I think he has a case. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I've been in NFL locker rooms when players were given ballots for Pro Bowls and other things. And, you know, the range of seriousness with which they take those kinds of responsibilities is pretty broad. And I think that probably is your answer.
Well, the last thing I needed was Patrick Mahomes to get a little imaginary chip on his shoulder. Now he's got one, Dan. I got no reason for hope, my friend. Dan Graziano joining us. Talk to me a little bit about what the latest is with the Titans and Vic Beasley, as he was a free agent signing for them that they seemed to be excited about, and now he's no call, no show to the beginning of camp.
Yeah, the GM, John Robinson, Titans GM, had a statement this morning where he said he's been in touch with Vic Beasley. Vic understands his absence is unexcused, and he expects that he'll be there shortly. So I don't know what exactly is behind it. I do know that you know, a veteran in Vic Beasley's case who's under contract is subject to fines of $50,000 a day for every unexcused day of he's absent from training camp. So he's going to get hit hard on this. I think this is day three. So if he ultimately opts out of the season, which he has at least another, well, maybe another week to do, then they can still fine him for the days he missed, according to the NFL memo I read earlier this week. But, I think it's a weird situation where the Titans now are left to wonder about a player that they brought in thinking he'd be a big help to their pass rush.
We're talking to Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL insider. As Dan just mentioned, players have about a week. It looks like they have 7 days from when the finalized deal is put in place between the NFL and the NFLPA. So they have about 7 days to make a decision. So as players are trying to figure this out, we've seen some big names. Nate Solder goes down and Damian Williams decides he's not going to play either. For the teams, how do they sort of let this process go when they know that the players have 7 days, but they need this information as quickly as possible?
The teams are powerless in this situation because no team is going to want to be in a position where they feel like they're forcing a player to make a decision on their timetable as opposed to the players. They don't want to be in a position where they feel like they're forcing to make or they're influencing the player's decision one direction or another. Just in terms of just general responsibility to your fellow human beings and employees, that would be a poor spot for any team to be in. So pretty much are left to sit and wait and sort of sort it all out when it's done. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, a lot of people would like to see this. You mentioned the final language of the deal has to be agreed to before, and then they have 7 days from that. It still hasn't been, could be today. But I think the sooner the better if you're a team, because you want to get to a point where like, oh, here's who we're going to have, here's who we're not going to have. And, you know, ideally, if a player's opting out, you know, he tells you quickly. But we could have a situation where, remember, guys haven't really even been to facilities yet. Like, they're showing up for testing, they're going home, and they have to test negative three times before they can go in. You could have a situation where a guy gets there, spends a day or two there in the facility under the new protocols, and says to himself, I don't like this. On second thought, I may not be comfortable in this environment, and you could have another wave of opt-outs once that starts happening. So, yeah, for teams, they're going to have to make their plans and stay loose. But I think that's going to be the case for the whole league, for every team, for every player all year.
We're talking to ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. So, Dan, a lot of people asking on Twitter, and I'll let you share some brilliance here. Explain exactly how the money works for the opt-out for the player and for the team.
If the player opts out and he does not have a – well, all right, start here. If the player opts out because he's got a high-risk medical category on his medical history, there's a list of 15 of them, including, you know, sickle cell trait, cancer, compromised immune system for a variety of reasons. So if a player has a medical condition on his medical record that is one of those categories – he can opt out and he gets a $350,000 stipend and his contract just tolls to next year. So if his contract was for three more years, 2020, 21, 22, now it's 21, 22, 23, exactly as is. If a player opts out and he's not in one of those categories, he gets a $150,000 stipend that actually acts as a salary advance. So like next year, $150,000 would come off of his salary to pay that back. And then his contract tolls into next year as the other one did. But interestingly, the $350,000 in the high risk category is not treated as a salary advance. That's just money you get. So you don't have to pay that back. So the big difference there between those two.
And it just presses pause for the team as a cap consequence?
Yes. So if you've already had a signing bonus or a roster bonus paid out, like in the case of Nate Solder, he had a $3 million roster bonus that paid in March. That's already paid, and it's on this year's cap. And if he's in the high-risk category, which I believe he is, he's a cancer survivor, then the $350,000 would be charged to the Giants' cap at the end of the year. So right now, they'd be carrying a $3 million cap hit for Solder, and then next year they would be charged, you know, what they would have been charged this year for the rest of it, for his salary and his prorated signing bonus.
So then let's look at one example of somebody we know right now is not coming to camp, but we don't know what it means next. Yannick Ngakoue has been very vocal about not wanting to play for the Jags. He's not at camp at this point. So if you're a player like Yannick and you've told a team you simply won't play for them again, is there logic in your mind to saying, all right, fine, I'll just opt out and I'll force a trade next year?
Interesting question with Yannick, because he hasn't signed his franchise tender, which means, you know, he's not technically under contract. So, yeah, you could, I guess you could be in a position where you could sign that tender, and it as soon as you sign it, it becomes a fully guaranteed one-year deal, and then you could opt out, and then it becomes a fully guaranteed one-year deal next year. So you'd be in the same exact position next year that you were this year. You'd just be delaying it by a year, and I guess you'd be taking the chance that maybe a team, you know, your team would see it differently and trade you next year. But I think in his case, if he wants out, the better play is to sit, do what he's doing, not sign it. Do what Jadeveon Clowney did last year with Houston, remember? He didn't sign it, and then they got to the end of August, figured that he wasn't bluffing, he really wasn't going to play for them, so they traded him to Seattle. So I think if you're Ngakoue, that's the way you're playing it right now, as opposed to pushing the whole thing off a year, still hoping you might be able to get a trade before the season.
Dan, you said the name, so I'll ask you about him. Jadeveon Clowney, a bunch of fan bases continue to look in, at Jadeveon watch.
Signed. Right? You have to remind yourself every now and then. Yeah, he's you know, he's been holding out for a number that hasn't been there for him, and whatever that number is, I don't know that he's going to get it anymore. I mean, I talked to some people with Seattle last weekend after the Jamal Adams trade, and I said, does this take you out of that? And they said, not financially, but, you know, then again, we really don't know what he wants or what he's waiting for. So at some point, he probably signs for 1 year, probably, you know, as much as he can get for 1 year, and then try and hit free agency again next year and see if it goes better for him. But right now, you know, like a lot of guys, I think he's not in a rush to get to camp. And, you know, he didn't go to camp last year until he was traded right at the end of August, beginning of September, and it didn't really cost him. He had a good year for Seattle. So I think he feels like he can get ready quickly and help somebody, and that he's not in a hurry. And his hope would obviously be, you know, maybe someone's circumstances change, right? Someone was hoping to get Ngakoue, but didn't, and now they got to go to plan B, or there's an injury to a pass rusher, or an opt-out perhaps of a pass rusher, and the team all of a sudden has a need that it didn't have before, and maybe they're willing to offer more. So I think that's where Clowney's sitting right now, and again, in no rush.
You guys can follow him on Twitter, at Dan Graziano, ESPN. As always, my friend, I appreciate you giving us the time, coming on and giving us all the expertise. Stay safe. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
Great stuff from Dan, as always. Penzo has synthetic motor oils made from natural gas. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Penzo, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Okay, the NBA is back. So tell me who's under the most pressure in the bubble. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who's under the most pressure in the bubble with the NBA being back? Plus, coming up, was Joe Kelly's 8-game suspension too harsh? Oh, we've got a lot to say about it. You'll hear it next. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you guys on the show, Penzo, performance line with the NBA back. Which player is under the most pressure in the NBA restart? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I'm still arguing it's Milwaukee and Giannis, by the way. I don't think anybody's under more pressure because of what it means to their organization to try and get something done. I think the pressure lies squarely for them on Giannis and on the Bucks. Now, we'll get into your take in a little bit. But in the meantime, one of the most predictable stories in Major League Baseball hit us yesterday. And it hit us in the sense of Joe Kelly, who we spent a lot of time talking about yesterday, the pitcher for the Dodgers that apparently threw at the Astros, has been now suspended. He's been suspended for 8 games. So to break down the suspension itself, Jessica Mendoza, ESPN Major League Baseball analyst, was on Golic and Wingo talking about it.
I do understand that Major League Baseball had to do something because they made a statement heading into the season. They would not tolerate anyone throwing at any batters with the Houston Astros. This clearly did that, but I mean, let's be real. I mean, 21 games is the equivalent of those 8 games if you look at a 162-game season. And I'm blown away just because of the fact he wasn't even thrown out of that game itself. And now here he is in a significant part of the season, 8 games. I do believe with the appeal, it'll probably get down to more, I'm hoping 3, maybe 4, but we'll see. But yeah, I'm definitely more on the outrage category. Although they did have to make some sort of statement. And I do believe pitchers will now think twice before maybe if they wanted to come at Alex Bregman and the Astros, they might not do it now.
First Take, your take on ESPN News. And look, I said it was predictable because the minute that there were no suspensions for the Astros, what did we say? On this show, at the time when we talked about it, we said, you know what? How difficult is it going to be when Major League Baseball suspends somebody for throwing at an Astro and suddenly the penalty is longer than all of the Astros combined, right, for cheating? We understand that. We knew this was going to come. We knew this was going to happen. And so now, I don't know what's funnier to me, that people are outraged because obviously we saw it coming, or that people are outraged by the outrage. I mean, just because we knew it was coming doesn't mean that it's right. I mean, this is still a fail. I understand all day, every day, that they had to offer immunity, and in order to offer immunity, it gave them the full spectrum of what they needed information-wise. But I'll still argue that immunity doesn't have to mean no punishment. Immunity could have been offered in the sense, if you've ever watched an episode of Law and Order, my God, what have you seen? I mean, you see Jack come in and say, all right, you have two options. You're going to go to jail for the rest of your life, or we'll give you 15 years, right? Like, there is some deal in negotiation that says, all right, here's the way it's going to go. If we discover the ins and outs of how you cheated, you never get to play baseball again. You'll be banned from the game for life. If you tell us, you're only going to be banned for X amount of games. The negotiation could have gone that way, but they didn't want to get into a very public battle with the Players Association, who they believe would have fought them hard on those punishments. Well, now what you have are the very players you didn't want to go to battle with who are throwing at other players, and they're policing themselves, something that's happened forever in Major League Baseball. So are we going to start applying this every time somebody's thrown at? I mean, is that the new standard moving forward? Or is it just because everybody wants to make a message so that future teams don't do this to the Astros? If you wanted to send in a message, why are you sending a message to the rest of Major League Baseball when, in fact, you never sent a message to the Astros in the first place? This is just another reminder that Rob Manfred is in over his head. He is not capable of doing the job that is leading an entire sport. He is not capable of commissioning in such a way that he can actually come in and get things done the right way. We said it then, we'll say it now. It doesn't mean that this is unexpected outrage. We knew this was going to happen, but it's still right to throw him under the bus for what he's done and the way he's handled it. Coming up next, the NBA's back. So, which player's under the most pressure and restart? We'll take your take, plus you'll hear some First Take.